Okay, it's April 2nd, 2005. I'm interviewing Ray Bauman for our World War II oral history interviews. What was your life like before the war?
Well, I was a farm kid, and I was raised and brought up on the farm until I went into the service in World War II.
What was your family's livelihood? Like where, parents, siblings, aunts, etc.?
Well, we've been on a farm all of our lives. My dad had just passed away in 1941, and I was trying to farm along with my brother, and I had a young sister and my mother. And I had several aunts and uncles that lived in the area who that summer, after 1941, between then and 1943, when I went into the service, they helped on the farm. We were on the farm for only 1 year after my father passed away, and that was, well, the siblings couldn't get along on the farm, so we broke up.
Where were you working or in school?
There it is right there. I was working on the farm, and I run the farm after my father passed away. I mean, I tried to, but I'd been out of, in fact, I didn't graduate from high school then, and I didn't really graduate or get my diploma until after I'd been in the service.
Okay. Were you single or married? Did you have children at the time?
No, I was single. I was only 18 years old, and but I had two siblings.
Did you have any political learnings before the war? What were they, and how did they compare to your families?
Well, in those days and times, it seems like anything like that, we never bothered too much about it, because the only information we ever had was when the newspaper come out, and for some reason or other, I never had an interest in the newspaper. And then on Saturday nights, when we all went to town with our eggs and cream to sell, my folks would let me go to the theater, and they did have what that time called Movietone News, and that was about 15 minutes worth, and that entailed all the worldwide things that happened during the past month or so, and that was about the only thing that we had as far as learning anything like that.
What were your greatest daily concerns prior to the war?
Well, our greatest concern, I think, was the crop that we were putting in to make money so we could survive for the following year, and that was always, I think, the number one goal was to raise a good crop. We weren't fighting the elements or any bugs that would ruin the crops, and you'd have a crop failure and consequently no money.
What was your family's perception regarding military service?
I don't think my family had anything to do with the perception of military service, because there was very few people in my locale that didn't have any people in the service, so consequently there was nothing going on about it like that.
Was there anyone in your family or community who was a veteran of World War I or other conflicts?
No. I had one uncle who had been in the service in World War I, but that was all. He never got overseas.
How did this affect your perceptions of the military?
There was no thinking about it. You mean as far as World War II was concerned?
Yeah. Did it affect your decision at all, or did it affect your...
Well, none outside the fact that I'd already told my father that I was going into the Navy as soon as I graduated from high school, because that was 1941, before he passed away. And that was my decision, was to go into the Navy in the summer of 1941. And, of course, the war started in the latter part of 1941.
What were your perceptions of the war and its combats prior to the U.S. entry?
Well, there really wasn't any, because, like I said before, there wasn't too much talk or even anything discussed with my family as far as United States and the rest of the world.
What were your opinions regarding Germany and Japan before the war?
Well, I think I answered that in the last question, was that the there just wasn't anything. We heard very little about it. I can remember one thing was we were shipping lots of old cars and aluminum to Japan, and they finally put a stop to that, the government did. And that's all I can remember about it.
What were your opinions regarding U.S. action prior to the war?
U.S. action? Gosh, I just don't have anything on that I can bring up.
How did you feel about isolationism?
Isolation as to the United States, I believe some of the government people were trying to make isolation, but most people, I feel, didn't want that, because we were somewhat of a world power, not entirely, but we're getting up there with the Great Britain, Germany, and so on.
Where were you getting your information?
Mostly from the news and theaters and from papers. And, of course, at that time, the radio was just starting to really come out.
Did your heritage or ethnicity affect your perception of the combatants?
No, I don't think so.
Where were you, and what were you doing when you found out that Pearl Harbor was attacked?
See, that was on a Sunday here. It was about 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, if I remember right. And I was helping my uncle. I was driving a truck, and he would load up seeds and grains to take to an elevator. And this was Sunday afternoon. And so that's what I was doing, was getting him set up for Monday delivery of the seeds. And we happened to stop at the house where I was picking up the seed, and they said that the Japs had bombed Pearl Harbor. That was soon after they'd done it.
What was your initial response?
I just didn't have any.
What was your family's response?
They you know, just something else, although it didn't take too long afterwards that my mother came from Germany when she was 6 years old, and she thought by marrying an American, and my father said so too, thought so too, that she was a citizen by marriage. But it wasn't too long after it was during the winter, I know, after the December 7th, that a sheriff came to the house and taken away our cameras and guns, because my mother was not a citizen.
What was your community's response?
Well, I think it was just the fact that they thought that with the war going on, you see, there's nobody at that time had any thoughts as to what it would entail to go to war, because the World War I, we got involved on the latter year, of that war. So consequently, you know, the bringing up of more production on everything, including farm products and military products and things like that, I don't believe that they even thought about things like that going into war.
How did you feel about Janet Rankin not voting for the war?
I didn't even know that the Janet Rankin was even in the Congress. I didn't realize that until afterwards, when she was the only woman that was in there, and then she voted no against the war.
How did you get involved with the military? Enlisted, drafted?
Well, I guess that at that time they was drafting so many, many of the kids around that were of my same age or approximately, and I decided that if I went in, maybe I had a chance of getting what I wanted to get, and so I you might say I enlisted because I was never sent a draft notice.
So, what did you enlist, and where were your and what were your expectations?
Well, where I enlisted was in Red Lodge, Montana. In that was the county seat in Carbon County, and then I was sent to Butte for physical and to see what branch of the service I went into. So while I was in Butte, that's they took everybody into the Army, and the only way to get in, of course I was told this before I went in there, was that you kind of had to fight your way to get in the Navy. And so I started arguing with the people in charge up there, and which is very unusual for me because I was really a backwards country kid. But they finally said, go ahead, try the Navy.
Why did you choose that branch?
There's your answer there. Why? Because I figured as long as I had a ship under me, if they sent me to sea, I'd have a dry place and a few things to eat besides most anything.
Did any family or friends enlist? Enlisting influence your decision?
No. That's not true.
If you were to go back in a branch, into a military branch of service, would you choose the Navy again?
Yes, I believe it would. Because one thing, you get... you can come out with a fairly good education, which I did. I never did follow it after I got out of the service. But I think if a person wants to, you can come out with most anything, which in the Army you can, but you don't have the number of things that you can get into.
How was your homesickness while on the USS?
Well, I don't think it was too much after I got on the Savo Island. I think it was for probably the first 6 weeks that I was in boot camp. And that was the worst of it. And after I found out that that once you signed up, you were stuck unless you went to Canada.
Did your ship encounter many warlike moments?
Oh yes, very, very, very few. I mean, there were a lot of moments and days and hours that we encountered a lot of bad things going on.
How high of a rating or rank did you attain while in the Navy?
Well, I went through electrical school. That's 4 months of strictly electricity. And then I got in, when I went in aboard ship, I started out as what they call fireman second class and got up and I come off of the ship after a year and a half as a second-class electrician. And I got a first-class electrician when I came home and I went into the Naval Reserves here in Billings and made first class.
While spending time in the Puget Sound area, how was your experience in the Pacific Northwest?
Cold and damp and foggy. And the thing of it was, we was up there 2 weeks. They had a carrier, the same type and class of carrier that we were going on was in the Puget Sound, and they used that for training. Used on there for 2 weeks to learn all about the ship, so that you went on to the ship that you were assigned to, because it was brand new, and nobody had ever been on it. It just came from the shipyards, and of course you had to know something about it before just going on there plumb cold, as they say.
How was your recreation on the ships?
Few and far between. We did have movies most nights, except if we were in the forward areas, because you couldn't have any lights, and of course, you know, projectors make a nice bright light. If we were ever come in to refuel and to get more ammo, we were allowed to go on the beach and recreate, as they say. A couple of times we even had some beer.
How about any friendship stories on the ship?
Oh, that was a lot of friendship stories. I think I told you the one. You want me to repeat that? One of them, of course, you can't call this friendship, but he was a good friend of mine, and we chummed around together, done a lot of work together, and he was a good-sized man, and of course, we all carried knives in case we went overboard. We had the ship sinking out from under us, and that was to get away from lines that maybe you got tangled in or something like that, or cut your way into something. And we all had, real good hunting knives. In fact, mine was made by a blacksmith in my hometown that was made out of a file. And that thing was as hard and tough as anything I've ever seen. The handle part of it was made out of leather, which was, you would never realize, but he done an excellent job. Anyway, this guy was, we were always kidding one another back and forth. One day I said something, and he took his knife out and put it up to my throat and said, "You blankety blank, you say that once more," he said, "and this will go plump through you." I was on the deck by that time, and somebody grabbed him from behind. I don't remember who it was now, and got him away from me. There was just too much combat, that's all it was. And he later apologized, but I was very careful from then on as to what I was saying to various people.
Is there any other favorite stories?
Well, gosh. I know of one. Being an electrician, you know, you're always working around electricity, and aboard ship, even though everything is supposed to be waterproof, water can't get into it. But I remember one time we had a light on the tail of the ship, on the after part of the ship. In fact, it was on the fantail that shone down into the wake of the ship, of the water. And somebody said it wasn't working. And why? Well, there's always somebody testing it. In fact, I sometimes test it myself. But the light quit working. So they sent me back to work on it. And I didn't have sense enough to go shut it off at the main control panel. So I opened it up. About the time I went to put my screwdriver on it to open it up, I got a shock of 120 DC voltage. This isn't AC, this is DC voltage, which knocked me about 20 feet back on that steel deck. Of course, you're grounded through the steel deck, see? And that taught me right there a number of things. And I think one of the biggest things that I had happen to me, and this is not very nice, but it was I and a friend of mine was working on the, we had a big panel board, probably about 25 feet long, and it controlled all the AC, which is used to run instruments aboard ship, because most of our lighting and our motors was all DC. Now, we were in behind the panel. I don't know, something had burned out, and we were replacing some switch. And they have bus bars, and they're about an inch wide and about a quarter of an inch or 3/8 of an inch thick running around down there. And it was hot back there. We were both sweating. And he reached over when he did his dog tags on his neck, flung out, and went into one of these bus bars. Well, needless to say, it killed him. We never did find anything of the dog tag, the chain, or anything. And so that was kind of sad for me. And afterwards, I know I got in trouble a couple of times. You had to wear two dog tags around you someplace. I had one on my wrist at that time and one around my neck. Well, I wore my other one around my ankle after that, because that scared me.
Where did you do your basic training, and for how long?
My basic training was done at Farragut, Idaho, and that was a new base. In fact, when they finally finished it, it was about 120,000 people on the base, and it was 13 weeks long, and I graduated from that, what they call boot camp there, and I went home for 10 days. Come back, and I knew I was going to get a school, but there were schools on board this new base, and I thought for sure I was going to Lewiston, Idaho, to the college there for electrical school. Well, I did. I was right on 4 months more back on at Farragut going to school.
Was it what you expected?
The school?
Basic training?
Oh, yes, because the only thing that they didn't have, they were so short of rifles at that time. We practiced with wooden rifles. Of course, much lighter to carry and a lot easier. The only time we had any real rifles is when we went out on the range to qualify for shooting.
Were you kept informed of world affairs during your basic training?
I don't think so, because there just wasn't that much around. There wasn't any radio, no television. We could go down to what they call ship service, and they had radios there, but nobody was just in. I think because they're just. The news wasn't flowing like it does today because of television and people actually being on the scene and everything like that.
How was military life different from your civilian life?
Oh, a lot more regimented. In the military, you do what somebody else wants you to do and do it when they want you to do it and so on and so forth. But in civilian life, you do what you want to do. And you had more time to think about it. In the military, you don't have the time to think about it.
How did you feel about being away from home?
Well, naturally, I didn't like it because there again, you're doing things that you sometimes don't want to do. And you try to play sick, that don't work either, because they can smell you out on that. So that's about it out there.
How much contact did you have with people back home?
Explain yourself a little. Is that when I was in the service?
During your basic training and then your time in the service.
Oh, well, I wrote letters to people that were friends of mine and to my family. And I received mail back from them. And that's about the only contact I had.
What do you remember most about basic training?
Oh, I think being so rigid, especially on some of the training, it sounds crazy, but I know I see people who walk kind of stooped. In fact, my neighbors, there's two boys in my neighborhood that walk around. They're so tall, I don't know, but they walk with their heads and shoulders are slumped over. And that was the one thing in basic training, I probably was too. And when you're walking straight up like that all the time, it don't take you very long to figure out why your shoulders are hurting. That's because you're getting straightened up and your bones are straightening up too. And that is something that I never realized until I was out of the service several years and talked to other people about that. It's how they straighten you out in the military.
What did you like the most?
Well, I can't say I liked anything the most, but it was nice. You didn't have to worry about your food, place to sleep, that's for sure, but that's about it.
What'd you like the least?
At least getting up in the morning.
What did you do for recreation during basic training?
Well, of course, we were five days a week we were there, and every other weekend we could go off of the base. And that is if they had inspections to the barracks. I see the barracks is about 120 guys to a platoon, and they have an officer come around every it's either late Friday afternoon or early Saturday morning, and they inspect the barracks. Well, he came around one time, and we thought we had a clean barracks, but he said not, because I guess he run his white gloves over every part that was too high for anybody else to reach. So we got grounded that week, and the next week we had an excellent record. So you got off the base every other weekend out of the 13 weeks that you were in there. And that was about it. And of course, you could go to ship service, which was just the canteen, or in the Army, I think they call them canteens or ships, something else or another. And you could go down there and buy, as the Navy said, ghee dunks and pokey bait. Pokey bait was candy, ghee dunks was ice cream.
What was it like meeting people from around the country?
Well, of course, I really like that, and I still do. I like to meet people and talk to them. And most of the people are about the same way. In fact, I still have one friend in California that we were good friends, that we correspond back and forth. And that's some, 60 years.
Did it create any tension? If so, what kind, ever?
What's that?
Just meeting different kinds of people.
Oh, no. There was nothing as far as meeting people like that. No tension. Because we were all in it for the same thing, and that was to try to put our country back to where it should be.
Did it change your previous perceptions? How well did you feel basic training prepared you for combat?
Well, it gives you the sense of your friends. You had to rely on your friends for a lot of things, or buddies, whatever you want to call them. And you're an individual, but you're not an individual as far as the rest of the people are concerned, because you're all working together and helping one another if they need the help.
How well did you feel you were mentally prepared?
I don't think mentally prepared. I don't think you're ever really mentally prepared for some of the things that you run into. I've noticed, especially today of the war in Iraq, and you see some of the pictures going on, and you know that some of those kids, as I was in World War II, did not expect the things to be as bad as they are and were. So it's nerve-wracking doing something like that. You expect one thing and you get another.
How well do you feel you are physically prepared?
Physically, I was well prepared because I was born and raised on a farm and I worked hard, really hard work. And when I was going to basic training, they really worked you there, especially some of the hikes that we had to go on and some of the obstacle courses. And obstacle courses was almost every day.
Describe some of your training.
Well, some of the training was putting in every platoon had to go to the mess hall for one reason or another, and they were really diligent in giving you a whole bunch of shots in your arm in the afternoon before you had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, the next morning, to go to the mess hall. That was really nice. Ha ha. They, let's see, but our company, and we didn't get what you would call a full military because the military experience there, because the base was not even complete. They were putting down blacktop, what we call the grinder. That's where you drilled, and so we done very little drilling. What we did was on somebody else's grinder, so we didn't do a lot of things like that.
What were your expectations as you prepared to leave basic training?
That I would get to go to electrical school in Idaho or Ames, Iowa, one of the two.
Where were you when you heard the news that the war was over?
I was home on leave after being gone for a year and a half. When the war was over. No, that's when they dropped the first atomic bomb. I was home, and I went back to Bremerton, Washington, which is 13th Naval District Headquarters, and I was there, and that's where I heard the news that the war was over with.
How did you feel about the war ending?
Well, it'd be nice, but that meant we could be going home.
What were your expectations once the war ended?
Well, it goes right back to that, to be able to go home, and it wouldn't have to be shoved around. Because there was, in World War II, there was so many people that that was in the service, and you take any seaport or embarkation point, it was so many people around that you just couldn't believe it. It's almost as bad as today's amount of people in the towns that they had.
What was the trip like home?
Let's see, I left from Seattle, and it was on December 6th. No, I was discharged December 6th. On the 7th, I come home. I left Seattle, it was nice, sunshine. Got up in the Cascade Mountains, and there was 3 feet of snow. And got to Billings, and there it was cold. It was really cold.
How did you get home?
Bus. By bus.
Did you go directly home?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What were your expectations about going home?
Well, just being nice not to be doing some of the things that I had been doing. And, of course, that meant I had to go. My folks were not farming anymore, and that meant I was going to have to get a job someplace else.
How did you feel about leaving your friends?
Well, I think it's somewhat like I watched MASH on television quite often, and he said that he would remember the other night they were talking about that, being friends after they left one another, and he said that, no, he said, we'll never be friends. We'll be friends when we leave here, but we'll never see one another again. And I think that holds true, because there have only been a couple of people, and some of those, there was one of them, I think he lives here in Billings. Well, I don't know about him, but I think his son lives here, and I've been going to contact him to see if he's the son of the guy that I was in the service with, but he was from Red Lodge. One from Roundup, and in fact there were two of them from Roundup, and neither one of those guys, in fact I run around with one of them, Chuck Nation from Roundup, and I have never talked to him or seen him since left the service. So really, you know your friends when you're in there, and can be very good friends, but I don't understand why they never, maybe it's me, I don't know. After you get out, and you just forget one another, that's all.
Did you stay in contact with them?
No. No, I never did.
What was the first thing you did when you got home?
Oh, gosh. See, I got home about 10 o'clock at night, because the bus between here and Bridger, where I was born and raised, don't get in there until 9:30 or 10. So I just talked with my mother for a little while and went to bed.
Why did you do that?
Why? Because I was tired.
How did people react to your returning home?
Well, it's nothing like it is today. It kind of aggravates me a little bit that, you know, people are so, when they come home, they are so wound up. And that was not illustrated in World War II at all. I mean, very little. Oh, they'd come up and hug you and kiss you, you know. But you know, now, gosh, they just go all out. Which I guess, I know it's a changing times. And that's what you've got to realize, it's changing times. Because it really has changed from World War II till today. The whole concept of living and staying alive and working, and the whole works.
What was your community like after you returned?
Well, there were very few people, because I was one of the first ones to come home due to the... After they started returning people home, they set up a point system both in the Army and the Navy. And it depended upon lots of things, how long you'd been in, what rank you were, and how many other things. And so I was one of the first ones to get home, and some of the guys Well, they came home soon after I did, but there was just nothing, too many people there. And I got home outside of people who never went anyplace.
What struck you the most?
Oh, boy. I don't know what struck me the most on that. Because it was December. I don't know.
How was civilian life different from your military life?
Well, like I said before, you're not regimented. And you do what you want to do instead of what somebody else wants you to do. And that's about it.
What was your easiest adjustment?
I think my easiest adjustment was just the time that on that. But another thing too was after I got out, it didn't bother me too much while I was in the service, but when I got out I started having pipe dreams about some of the incidents and some of the things that I seen. And I don't know why they showed up after I got home. I have no idea.
What was the most difficult?
That's one of them right there that I just mentioned.
What benefits did you receive and how did you use them?
Let's see. I got, of course, they came up with the GI Bill of Rights. You could get a college degree. And I wish I had of it at the time, but I think I was scared, the fact that I'd been away from school, you know, and I wasn't what you would call a real sharp person in school. I mean, I really had to dig and work at what I got. And it didn't come natural to me, so I thought, I'm not going back. But I did. There was a guy that came, in fact, he came from Massachusetts, and he'd been an instructor in the Army Air Corps. And he came to Bridger there, and he bought a couple of light planes, and he started instructing. So I took flight training, and I got my private license from that. Haven't done much flying since because it's expensive private flying. But at least I can say that I got it anyway. And that's about all that I use my GI Bill for. But there's so many went through college. Went to become technicians in automobiles and other things.
What about the war made the biggest impact on you?
Well, it taught me one thing, to be a heck of a lot more meter with various things. I know when I was home before the war, I didn't care what I'd done with my clothes. I just threw them someplace, you know. And you didn't do that in the service. You had to hang the things up, keep it neat, and everything like that. And that carried over to where I do the same thing. And my wife has been gone now for 2 years. She's in a nursing home. And I still keep the house just as about as neat as when she was home.
How would you sum up your service?
Well, I'm thankful for what it taught me, but I wouldn't want to go do it again.
What did it mean to you?
Well, it's just a lot of things that I learned there about myself that I probably wouldn't have found out about because of the various situations that you get into.
What image from your service sticks out with you the most?
What image? Well, I think the thing that really stuck out, I think a little while ago, do you remember when I was talking to the instructor about I have that diploma? motion sensor. Going across the equator, you know, and you go through initiation on that. And I have a diploma that's about 18 inches square on that. It's really, really pretty. It's kind of dim now, but anyway, to get that, you cross the equator, and you're a polywog. That's your designation. You're a polywog. When you go across the equator and you get your diploma, then you're a shellback. Well, the shellbacks initiate the polywogs. Okay, one of the first things that they do is the Jenny Elder Bot, right after chow in the morning, and they have various things that they, well, for one thing, they cut your hair. They took a razor right down, just left me a scalp about that long. Of course, I never had my hair, probably about as long as yours. Then you had to call to a garbage chute. They put the breakfast leftover from in the morning. You went through a garbage chute that was made of a canvas and probably about that big around, and filled it up with water and garbage. And about went to this room. You crawled through that, went to a tank, and they painted you up with mustard and ketchup. And then a couple guys had in there. Are you a shellback? There's several other things that happened before this, and this is the last thing. And you come up and you don't know what to say, whether you're a shellback or a polywog. You come up and you say polywog. Wrong answer. Dog you in again. Until you said shellback, then you came up and they got you out. So I think that's one of my most memorable things, just thinking about that.
Would you do it again?
You mean that initiation? Of the whole thing.